1 John chapter 4 this morning. I was thinking this week, I guess it was just when I was mowing yesterday, I was thinking about these churches that have the bulletins and the pastor has to have a title to put into the bulletin. Some churches have those ready to go early in the week. Some of them wait till Saturday night, and probably because the pastor doesn't have a title until Saturday night. Sometimes the pastor doesn't have a title until Edward asks him what the title is on the way out the door afterwards. But I was a little amused, I guess, in the sense that I was thinking about that yesterday, and I would have thought that Troy had a copy of the subject this morning when he selected his first song. Because that's where we're going this morning. 1 John chapter 4. I want to look specifically at the latter part of verse 17. But if you look at this whole chapter, in order to determine the context of what is being said here, you see that he opens up talking about not believing every spirit, but try the spirits. He's giving some admonition to the church, and he shifts over somewhere along here. He shifts over and he begins to speak about love, and he carries on with love for quite some time. Loving God, God loving us, God is love, manifestation of God's love toward us. And so the subject that we find this verse in, or this portion of verse, it's wrapped up in the subject of love. Because he continues further than that in verse 18 and 19 and 20. We see it in these verses following all the way to the end of the chapter. He's speaking about love. Some of your wheels are turning, you're thinking, well, that song that Troy chose and led us in the first song really wasn't speaking about love, was it? Did I miss something? No, but it's found in the very last part of verse 17. And so we would understand that the context here may be specific towards the subject of love, and yet I believe that John is also opening it up for us, and it is easy for us to open it up to the whole realm of life, of Christian living. And that is found in these words, because as he is, so are we in this world. As he is, so are we. Six words, and if you add the last three to give us the context in which we are in, then we have nine words here, nine little words given to us in the most simplest possible form of speech, and yet giving us the gospel plan, the gospel message, that we are to be like Jesus. Profound concept. And yet it's conveyed to us here in a simple way. Perhaps it's like some little nugget of gold or a little round gem of a pearl. The wisdom that is given to us here, the reality that is given to us here, should be something that we take into our own lives and adorn our lives with the beauty of this portion of the scripture. As he is. You see, that's the plan. We can't go very far in anything that we're doing without having a plan. The plan is found in those three words, as he is. We find, first of all, we look at this thought of as he is, we would see that he had a transformed life. I'd like to have been one of his first disciples, one of the 12 that were called. I think if I had been one of those 12 disciples in the time when Jesus walked the earth, I think that I would have been right along with them, that it would have been easy to lose sight of really who Jesus was. But then three of those disciples had the opportunity to be in a place where Jesus was transfigured before them, to where they saw beyond the veil of the human body, beyond the veil of the human flesh, beyond the veil that was enshrouding the Son of God with the man appearance. They were able to see him really as he was, transfigured in the glory of heaven, in the glory of God, the grandeur, and all that was involved. I don't believe that those disciples had at any point envisioned that that is who Christ was. Even though they had in their mind that he was the Christ, even though they had in their mind that he was a step up, that he was beyond the rabbis, he was a great leader, a great teacher, he was surely a something to do with the Messiah, and all of these facets that would have come into their mind, I find it difficult to believe that they were really able to comprehend who he was. The reason why I guess I believe that is simply because we lose sight of the known things when we have something that is strongly visible in front of us. We lose maybe a bit of knowledge that we can't see, but we hear it or we believe it even to be fact. But when we see something in front of us, we tend to grasp that faster and deeper. But when they saw him transfigured, I believe it opened their eyes. And I realize, and I don't understand why Jesus didn't allow all of the disciples to see that. He only chose the three to go that far with him. But at any rate, it gave them the understanding that here was one that had a transformed life from heaven to earth. This body that they saw was a different form, was a different measure than what he had before. Within this thought of his transformed life, we have to also understand, we have to come to the understanding that as Jesus was transformed from the glory of heaven into the form of mankind, to walk this earth, to carry our griefs, to share in our burdens, to experience our temptation, he would also have to fare within the midst of that body the same things that you and I fare. The same things that we experience. That may be hard for us to understand. Us not having seen him as he was and not having seen him as he is and with our own physical eye, we just have to read the scriptures and by faith believe it and try to understand it and grasp it. And so I believe that at that point we now struggle with the idea that he was man. But he was transformed into our likeness, so to speak. He was transformed into our way of living, to deal exactly with the things that we deal with. As we look at his transformed life from the realms of glory into the realms of the human, we have to also, as we see it through Scripture, as we realize his life through the Gospels and given to us daily some of the things that he faced and dealt with, we also have to understand that he had a triumphant life. He was victorious. We could go back and spend some time just nitpicking through Matthew chapter 4. You see, Matthew chapter 4 is the temptation of Christ. Then was Jesus led up of the Spirit into the wilderness to be tempted of the devil. We could probably spend a lot of time just looking at that very first verse. We could talk about it from our vantage point, from our perspective. We could probably get some ideas as to what we would think was taking place. We may have some varied differences in our opinions and our thoughts about that. Jesus was led up of the Spirit into the wilderness to be tempted of the devil. Verse number 2 adds a facet to us that I don't know that I can understand. When he had fasted 40 days and 40 nights, he was afterward and hungered. You say, preacher, what do you mean you can't understand that? You understand hunger? Oh, absolutely. I don't understand how this fits necessarily. He was led up there into the wilderness to be tempted by the devil. And then we find that for the next 40 days and 40 nights, he is on a fast. He is involved with a fast. It was of such a fast and such a condition that at the end of that 40 days and 40 nights, his body was crying out to him. He was hungered. I don't think it was just simply the little twangs of a twinge of hunger that we may experience as the preacher goes a little long on a Sunday morning and we know that that steak or that roast is cooking at home or the ham is baking in the oven or whatever it is that's being prepared for your Sunday dinner today. And you think about that and your stomach begins to tell you, your body begins to tell you, oh, I didn't eat enough for breakfast or I didn't eat anything for breakfast. And I'm looking forward to this great meal at Sunday dinner table. Quite often you and I in our circumstances, we reach the point where our hunger pangs are really sharp to us and it's getting our attention. We use the term, we use the words, I'm starved. We don't have a clue what being starved is. We don't understand starvation at all. We have so much and so many opportunities, so much in the pantry and so much in the freezer. And lo and behold, we take a picture of our dinner table today and share it among our congregation here and bring it into a compilation of pictures. We would find that there is an abundance of food on our dinner tables today. But he fasted for 40 days and he was hungered. I can't fathom that. I can't quite understand that. I don't grasp how this all works within the context of the temptation. But I'm trying to get us to a point where we're coming to this thing that Jesus was transformed. But then also we find that Jesus was victorious. He was not overcome by the things of this world. He was triumphant in his life. Immediately we find that the tempter came to him and said, if you are the Son of God, command these stones to be made bread. Why not? I know that I'm the Son of God, he could have said. Satan, you know that I am the Son of God. You know full well that I could make these stones into bread. You know full well that I'm hungry. Why not do it? Somehow we have to understand that Jesus was catching the little bitty line that Satan was feeding him. How many of us catch it that quickly? The small, insignificant situation, the small, insignificant thing, the small, insignificant, lacking of any of our concern or interest, and yet the enemy of our soul brings it to us, and he's trying to get us to cross over that line. But I digress here. I'm moving off into another area. I'm trying to look at what Jesus is dealing with, and there's that fine line there. He needs something to eat. His body's crying for something to eat. It's easy for him to provide himself something to eat. But in doing so, it tells us that Jesus could not do that. Otherwise, in essence, he would be yielding to the temptation of the devil. I don't think we fully understand that. I don't. Maybe you do. The devil then taketh him up into a holy city and setteth him on the pinnacle of the temple. If you are the Son of God, cast yourself down. It is written, he shall give his angels charge concerning thee, and in their hands they shall bear thee up, lest thou dash thy foot against a stone. Jesus could have easily told him, turned to him and said, Satan, you know that I'm the Son of God. I know that I'm the Son of God. You know that I could do that very thing. And actually, I don't even need the angels to come and protect me because I am the Son of God. I could easily cast myself down and have no harm come to me. Without going in or trying to go into all the details of what is taking place here in chapter 4, the temptation of Christ, we understand that this temptation was covering so many facets and so many areas and so many points where Satan himself was coming after the Son of God. But Jesus was what? Victorious. He was triumphant. He came away from that scene as the angels of heaven came to minister to him, as the angels came to share with him, to strengthen him. We find that Jesus was completely victorious. That's just one circumstance that we can look at. This one passage that pinpoints the temptation of Christ, where he is being fought very specifically by the enemy himself. But if we were to just to glance through the Gospels, just to hold our Bible open and glance through and find different passages of Scripture and begin to put ourselves in the place that Jesus was in, I'm talking about dealing with people, dealing with problems, dealing with situations. We'll find over and over again that as we look through it, that Jesus had a different perspective than what most of us would have, or most people in general would have. Do we need any specifics this morning? I wonder what would happen. Let me just go here. I wonder what would happen if we were in the place of Christ in the situation with, let's see, Mary, Martha, and Lazarus. Let's just drop out Lazarus for the time being and look at Mary and Martha. You know, Mary was just hungering after the words of Christ. Man, let me talk to you for a second. Well, that's quite an ego boost. That's pretty good. I've got somebody that wants to hear me. I've got somebody that's longing to listen to my words. I have somebody here that is really, really desirous. That's quite an ego boost. You say, well, what? You may not see it in that passage. You may not realize it in that passage. But as we understand that Jesus was tempted in all points such as we are, yet without sin, we might be able to conclude that there is a danger for Christ in that very scene, that his heart would be turned, that his focus would be turned because of the possibility of the human ego. What did Jesus do when Martha came in and she began to ridicule and accuse and do her little cry thing and all of that? And, you know, how do we react when that sort of thing takes place? I'm just talking about the simple things of the stories of Jesus Christ and how it relates to the side that Jesus had of being man and walking this earth as a vessel of humanity. In the midst of all of these spiritual things, we would lose sight of the physical. We would lose sight of the human and just simply focus that he was the Christ. And yet it tells us that he was every way a man. Maybe the ladies don't understand it the way that I would necessarily try to picture that very thing there with Mary coming to Christ or hungering for his words and the ego thing. And maybe some of you men don't understand that either, but I believe that it's a possibility. And yet we find through the entirety of it all that Jesus was constantly victorious. I can't emphasize that enough. You and I can't lose that. That in every way, in every situation, that Jesus was victorious. What did it do to Christ when his disciples were fearful and fled? They all forsook him. Even though they had vowed their attention and their commitment and they were going to go all the way through and they were going to face it all. And Peter actually said, "I will even die for you." And then they all did what they did. Let's just put it in our layman's terms. What if Jesus would have gotten his eyes off of God and had them on man? Boy, if this is the kind of disciples, God, that you or Father that you've given to me, boy, what's the use? But the end result, we find Jesus saying from the cross, "Father, forgive them." None of them understand what they're doing. Even the disciples didn't comprehend what was taking place. He didn't lose sight of the mission. He didn't lose sight of the Father in the midst of all the temporal things that were taking place. You and I have a great possibility of losing sight of the spiritual side of things because of all the temporal things. But he was victorious. John here in this passage is telling us that we are to be like him. As he is, so are we. So there it is. To be like Jesus. To be like him. So let's look at the transformed life. As Jesus was transformed from the glory realm to the human realm, we are to be transformed from the human realm to the glory realm. That isn't to take place entirely or completely until we cross over the line of worlds. We make our way into the final part of eternity, as it were. But in the here and now, there's a transformation that takes place also. And that transformation, that transformed life that takes place is that we become like Christ is or was. You see, the tendency is, on the human side, Scripture bears it out on a number of occasions, that all we like sheep are gone astray. We tend to go our own direction. We tend to do our own thing. We tend to focus on what we want. We tend to be selfish people. That's the human side. That's exactly what Scripture bears out. That is perhaps our greatest problem. Which also is in... folded in there is pride, which is selfishness. See, as a sheep, Scripture gives it to us in Old and New Testament that we as sheep are ever wandering, ever reaching for the grass on the next step and the next slope and beyond this fence, going astray, doing that which is right in my own eyes. But the transformed life that we are to see within this spiritual walk, as we find it as He is, so are we. That transformation takes place where our focus and our commitment changes from that of being upon self and my desires, but transformed into living for Christ, so that I can say with the scripture writer that everything that I do to glorify Him. So that we can have a triumphant and victorious life as well. As He was transformed into this life and He lived a victorious life, so we are transformed and brought into a relationship with Christ where He transforms us so that we can be victorious, so that we are not the common sheep wandering astray, but staying within the confines of the fold. Victorious living. Oh, I know that sometimes it may seem that this is and that is okay, and this and that is acceptable. We have to be just as careful as Jesus Christ was in the face of temptation in order for us to be victorious in our everyday life. I like the passage that essentially says, "Never fear, I have overcome the world." One time Jesus said, be of good cheer. I think it's safe to say that we can translate that to say, never fear. I have overcome the world. He says that in John 16:33. I have overcome the world. If He has overcome the world and we are being transformed into His image, then we too can overcome. That's what He's telling us. That's what He's saying to us. That we can be overcomers. If we go from John chapter 16 verse 33, where Jesus is telling us that He has overcome the world, and then we jump all the way over to Romans chapter 12 and verse 21, where it tells us here, let me back up to verse 20, and perhaps I should go back even further earlier into this passage, but let me just start with verse 20. Therefore, if thine enemy hunger, feed him. If he thirst, give him drink, for in doing so thou shalt heap coals of fire on his head. Verse 21 is this: be not overcome with evil or of evil, but overcome evil with good. Overcome is a word that's given here in this verse to indicate that there is a way to get above the evil, to get above the problems, to get above the attack of the enemy. But it's also specifically talking about the problem that exists, or the potential of a problem that exists right around us within our own community or within our own little world. Where somebody does something to us. If thine enemy hunger, feed him. Boy, that's a tough one. If we go from where Jesus is saying that don't be afraid or be of good cheer, that He has overcome the world, and then we jump all the way over to this context of loving somebody and caring so much for somebody that we would heap coals of fire on their head by overcoming their evil by doing good. Everything in between those two points would indicate for us that we, through Christ, can have a victorious life. That everything about us, everything about our life, whether it's what we do or what we say, how we live on a regular basis, it all is done to glorify God. Because John tells us here in this passage, not only that as He is and so are we to be, but he says that we are to be this way now in this world. Not in the future time of eternity, of heaven, but a constant, The constant should be in this transformed life that I am trying to live and follow after Jesus, being like Him, is simply this thought. Is Jesus visible in my life by those that are watching me every day? Really? Really? That means when something doesn't go my way, somebody treats me poorly, doesn't mean that I'm curling up and letting the world run all over me and stamp all over me. It just simply means that everything I do, is Jesus visible to those watching me? In this world, that includes my neighbors, that includes people that are watching that aren't my neighbors as such. I can think of so many things right now that come to my mind, that have been on my mind, that have brought to me this very thought. Did I show Jesus there, or did I show John Ziegler there? As He is. One translation inserts another word that the King James doesn't have, and it's also. So also. Me also, like He was or is. To be like Jesus, living for Him, governed by Him, directed by Him, so that everything I do, as He is, so are we. Let's stand together this morning. Transformed into His image, so that we can be victorious as He also was victorious. As He is, so are we.